keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, to Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. And this hour, we have a new book and on the show that I'm looking forward to having the discussion with and about. And happy to welcome to the show today, Reverend Sharon Washington. Is it Reiser?
Risher.
Risher. You know, I went everywhere in my head what this is, and Risher is where it landed. Okay, Risher. Reverend Risher, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you this morning?
To be honest, I am dog tired.
You're a busy woman.
I am. I just got in last night from doing a keynote for the Black Cultural Committee in Springdale, Arkansas.
Oh. Well, how'd it go?
And earlier in the week, I was in Charleston at the presidential debate. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, my goodness. So you've been ripping and running, and of course, you know, as an advocate. And then you're working for the Lord, too. I mean, you know, I bet you are tired.
I'm tired. I texted my pastor this morning and said, I can't make it today.
Yeah. Well, and I'm certain that, you know, you're there in spirit. But we're happy that you could be with us over the phone where you don't have to get dressed up or anything.
Praise God. Because if you see what I look like, oh, man.
I completely understand. That's the beauty of radio. You know, you don't have to put on makeup or anything. You can just be on there just as you are. In Charleston, South Carolina, is a city that the name is etched in our heads for so many reasons since 2015. But before I start talking about that in your book, you have served as a staff chaplain and trauma specialist at Parkland Hospital and as associate pastor for congregational care at Rice Chapel AME Church in Dallas, Texas. How long have you been in the ministerial capacity?
Well, that journey started in 2003, mm-hmm. when I was working for the Presbyterian Church, and people started to notice gifts and talents that I had and mm-hmm. mentioned going into ministry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I left Charlotte, went to Austin, Texas, went to seminary, starting out wanting to be a multicultural pastor in the Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm.
And did an internship at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew in my heart that's where my ministry would be. So mm-hmm. that led to being trained as a chaplain and moving to Dallas. And that's how that started.
Okay, so knowing that's the case, the preparation was underway really for you to, and training and knowledge, for you to be able to deal with what happened in 2015.
Yeah, it took a realization.
Mm-hmm.
It really did, to think about the journey in the path of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the title of the book came about, because it really was a preparation the way that my life journeyed at this point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It really was. And when I realized that and started to think, it was mm-hmm. like, just was, it started hearing Martin Luther King speak when I was in Charleston at 9 years old.
Mm.
And Dr. King's voice to me sound like what I thought God would sound like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and I knew that I wanted to be a speaker. I knew that. I mean, didn't really pursue it, mm-hmm. you know, but I just knew that I would do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I first got the book and the title, and I didn't really, do the research and stuff on, but I said that title is intriguing. That's why I really wanted to, without a lot of knowledge about the book, I said, there's something really deep about this book and this situation for such a time as this is not a standard title. It's really clear. And I'm from the old school. So, that's one of the things that my mama used to say, does that describe your road, as you just said, that you took? And on that road, did you give us some of the ideas of what the healings and helpings that you have been with others as it prepared you for 2015 and the Charleston massacre?
Ooh, that's a lot. Yeah. Seems like, but the actual title comes from the Book of Esther, mm-hmm. in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And it starts in chapter 4, and there's a story about Esther being in the palace with the king, and the king not knowing that she was a Jew. And his regime, his people, wanted to kill the Jews. And her cousin, it says cousin, some translation says uncle, told her, hey, you are in the capacity to do something about this. Mm-hmm. Are you going to let all your people perish because you don't have enough guts to stand up for yourself? Could it be that God placed you here for such a time as this? And that's where that title came from, in knowing that, like you said earlier, that my whole journey, my whole life has prepared me for this journey, and it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming, but it's something I knew that God was calling me to, even when I didn't understand it myself. You know, I picked up out of Dallas and just left, quit my job, which I call it, I retired, because I haven't had a full-time job since, but I actually retired myself and moved back to North Carolina to be with my kids in that healing process, and didn't know what I was going to do. But for weeks and months, I kind of moped around here, didn't know what I was going to do. I was coming off rehabbing a broken ankle that happened during Charleston, and that's a whole nother book. And oh, my God. So I was in a broken place.
Now, on chapter 1, June 17th, 2015, you start immediately talking about getting the dreaded call and the situation that was unfolding around you. Get us started discussing that this morning, please.
Okay, I'm the chaplain on call for 3 o'clock until 11. Later in the afternoon, I was attending to a family whose grandfather had died. And they were African-American family. I think they kind of knew granddad was going, so they had already reconciling themselves, you know, the grief. So they were very stoic. And there is an amount of paperwork that you have to fill out, of course. And for that reason, some reason that night, I didn't have that paperwork with me. And I'm usually on point, but I didn't. I excused myself from the family, went to my office, And I say that the Spirit of God sent me to my phone because it was charging and because I was trying to get back. I wouldn't have checked my phone. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But God said, check your phone. And I saw these several missed calls from my daughter, and I knew something was up. And panic modes, you know how that feeling, like,
yes,
oh,
ma'am.
My God.
Yes, ma'am.
Something happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I got hold of my daughter, and I said, she said, Mom, Jonquil, who is my nephew, had called her and said he had heard that something had happened in the church, and he didn't know what was going on, but his... And my sister Esther, see the chat Esther,
mm-hmm.
They said, well, they were going down to the church. And I'm like, wait a minute, boo, what church are you talking about? She said, Ma, Granny's church.
Mm-mm-mm.
And that dreaded feeling sunk. But I got to get myself back upstairs to deal with the family. I left work early. I just knew something was wrong. I kind of stayed around. I told the other chaplain who was on call with me, I got to go. So I'm going to need you to get this pager because that's how we are contacted. I need you to take this trauma pager for me because I got to go. He left. So it was 2:30 in the morning. 2:30 in the morning, that's when my phone rang. I got home. I'm turning on the news. It's all over everywhere, but they're never saying, they're using the word fatality.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell asleep on the couch waiting, and the phone rang.
Mm-hmm.
And my niece, Najee, said, Sharon, the FBI chaplain want to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
So 2:30 in the morning, I'm screaming at the top of my lungs, about to choke my little doggy to death, because that was the only thing I could grab onto.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wandered around for 2 days in a fog, trying, ooh.
That must have been torturous for you.
I don't think there's words to describe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's words. I don't think there's words. And the sad part about it, there's lots of people that know the kind of sorrow that I have gone through because of gun violence in this country.
Mm-hmm. And you were at a distance. You weren't like right there. You had to get there.
Right. Yes. See, and you talk of, I had kind of a different survivor's guilt.
Yeah, yeah.
The guilt of being not there.
Right.
The guilt of not being with my family when everybody was gathered at the embassy suite, where the mayor and everybody else was gathering to keep you updated. I wasn't there for that. I wasn't there for the bond hearing when the families talked about forgiveness. I wasn't there. But I guess I wasn't supposed to be there. All the things that ensued after that, I guess it went its course.
With that guilt that you just mentioned, a lot of people probably have that for various reasons, and that was part of what you have been dealing with since 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak on what are some of the ways, or scripture, prayer? I don't know what your
combination. Let me tell you, I'm going to be honest with you. For maybe the first 6-7 months, I didn't go to church.
Oh, wow.
I didn't want to hear, God, you know, why God? I mean, I'm regular, even though, you know, I have Reverend in front of my name and this, that, and the other. At that time, I wasn't anybody but me, a broken child of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I, too, question, why God? I would pray more than I had ever prayed, and then the next time I would be yelling and laminating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's deep. It really is. That's deep. Before we go to the break, Reverend Sharon, and see, you know, I'm Sharon too, so it's easy to say your name.
Yeah.
For sure. On page 5, that's just the first couple of pages that she just shared with you all. There's a lot there. You say on June 19th, Dylan Roof appeared in court by video from the jail. The whole thing was televised, and I was transfixed on the screen, still watching from Dallas. When we come back from the break, being so you were just talking about the guilt and that you felt, could you give us more on some of what you were feeling at that time? Because when things happen to people like this, I think others can relate and really, you know, get something from it and maybe move through whatever it is that they need to move through. So when we come back, we're going to pick it up there and then go into the other chapters of the book. For today, such a time as this, hope and forgiveness after the Charleston massacre. Let's take a time out and we'll be right back.
Listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
On July 27, 2012, WFSK was granted a license by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest as a public trustee until August 1, 2020. Our license will expire on August 1, 2020. We must file an application for license renewal with the FCC on April 1, 2020. When filed, a copy of this application will be available for public inspection at www.fcc.gov. It contains information concerning the station's performance over the last 8 years. Individuals who wish to advise the FCC of facts relating to our renewal application and to whether this station has operated in the public interest should file comments and petitions with the FCC by July 1, 2020. Further information concerning the FCC's broadcast license renewal process is available at WFSK's office, Fisk University, 1017th Avenue North, Nashville, 37208, or may be obtained from the FCC, Washington, D.C., 20554, or www.fcc.gov.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we bring you the Jubilee of Charm City, its history of jazz, followed by Baltimore's decline to now, a sudden rebirth. Meet the figures behind the city's renewal. Trumpeter Sean Jones, NEA Jazz Master Todd Barkin, and the Baltimore Jazz Collective. I'm Christian McBride. Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
Support for WFSK comes from United Way of Greater Nashville. Want to keep your hard-earned money? Don't pay to have your taxes prepared when you can get it for free at a United Way free tax prep site or prepare them yourself at UnitedWayFileFree.com. You qualify if you or your household earn less than $66,000 in 2019. To find a location near you, don't wait. Visit UnitedWayFileFree.com today. Powered by United Way of Greater Nashville.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And we are happy to have you listening today, either here in Nashville at 88.1 WFSK or online to the global family at WFSKFM.org. This book this morning is very much a tool for people who are dealing with issues of grief and loss, particularly if it relates to the type of situation that happened in the Charleston massacre, or just violence at any stage of the game. Reverend Sharon Reicher, maybe you've seen her, because she certainly has appeared in a lot of places on CNN and Good Morning America, BBC Radio, the Today Show, CBS, and other places, as well as in print. In Essence, Vogue, and Vox. She has been speaking and sharing her story about the loss of her mother and family and friends in Charleston in 2015. We're happy to have her with us this morning from her home in South Carolina. And she is a blessing. And we're happy that she was able to be with us today to have the discussion. Now, in chapter one, before we leave that and go into the rest of the book, I mentioned on page five about the date June 19th and when you were seeing the shooter, Dylan Roof, on television for, the first time or in jail. And you were out of town. Can you give me some of the, if you can remember, some of the things and what was keeping you, and were you angry, and did you think God didn't care and all that? I mean, what was going on with you?
A little bit of everything, and that's what it was so hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, for 2 days I wandered around in my apartment. Smoking cigarette and drinking coffee. I'm going to just be real.
Okay.
And didn't take a shower, didn't want to think about what I had to pack. I couldn't think about what to carry with me. I had to make reservations. I was a mess. I was a mess. In the mix of praying to God and then yelling at God, all of that. And I think people need to know that God can take all of that. And when you're hurt so deep, you have to allow yourself to be real about how you feel. Because I was angry and rageful and my brains was trying to keep up with my heart because there was so much emotions going on. I don't think my brain kept... It was in a fugue state. Things weren't connecting.
And one of the things that sometimes misconceptions, you know, people just say, just pray it away. And, you know, but you just question God. Is, you know, he with you? Does he love you? Why are you turning your back on me? You know, that's one of the times when you go through stuff like that. You know, you don't lean closer. And I think, I don't know how, if the church really explains that, or the community of faith really explains that to people, that they may not, you know, be feeling like hanging out with the church people and singing hymns.
And I think that's one of the disservice that the church does to people. You don't allow someone to say, I am struggling. Mm-hmm. I'm struggling. I need you to affirm that this struggle is all right. But it's like you go through, you know, whatever it is, the death, and you're supposed to bounce back in a couple of weeks. Because, mm-hmm. like, okay, you know, time for you to get on with it. And how do you get on with it even in normal life? But then to have this horrific thing that has shocked the world.
Is a lot. It is a lot. Were you feeling that this was going to be one of, or have you thought since that, I think a lot of people were shook by this because it was a simple act of the church being the church and accepting somebody to come on in. And, mm-hmm. you know, and this little white boy comes in, and then he turns around and kills everybody. I mean, that really shook the, you know, the faith rafters, if there's such a thing, of a lot of people mm-hmm. who, mm-hmm. you know, were questioning a lot of, because that, you know, other incidents had happened and, you know, were happening with in various communities of faith. But they were just trying to do what thus said the Lord. I mean, you know.
Right.
That's got to be a tussle for the folks there in that region.
After some time. Yeah, after some time. You know, one of the ideologies of white supremacist movement is about the attack on the church. They look at the church as a hypocrisy. You know, the same way you hate people for the color of their skins, you're going to retaliate against the institution of the church. Because what more damage can you do?
Right.
And to attack a black church.
That's true.
That's the ultimate. So Dylan Roof knew what he was doing when he attacked that church and why.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
If you're going to try to kill black people, well, the first place you're going to go is their church. Right. And that church with the history that it has.
Yes.
I mean...
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. Reverend Sharon, is when you tell the story over and over, and it's 5 years later, does it get easier, or do you relive a lot of stuff, you know? Because you wrote the book, and quite naturally mm-hmm. you've done a lot of interviews, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Is it therapeutic? For you to write the book, your feelings, get it off your chest.
It was.
Okay.
It was. It gave me a chance to really be truthful uh-huh. about some things and the really look at the transitioning of my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It really opened up a lot of things that I had kind of suppressed. And Mama was not a kind of person that liked conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So you never really discussed issues. You kept it close. You didn't talk about it. You know how they were,
mm-hmm.
you know. Oh, Sharon, be the bigger person.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I continue to ask myself, how long am I going to do this? Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I talk about this, there's a deep, deep sadness. And then other times, it's, having that armor of, I need to reach somebody mm-hmm. and this is my job and this is what I got to do. But most times I'm going to choke up. Most times there are going to be tears. Mm-hmm. And I know that's because where I take myself, but most of the time the tears are for them because we need to continue to cry for them. So there will never stop being tears from me.
Well, I just, you know, some of this, I don't want to, you know, you told the story over and over, but I just, you know, feel just a little bit.
There are good days and then there's other days.
Yeah.
But I get through. I get through, and sometimes it takes a day or two when I, like now, I've traveled. Today is Sunday. Tomorrow is Monday.
Yeah.
I'll just really kind of lay around and sleep and kind of build myself back up.
Sure.
And I'm traveling again on Thursday, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know that, you know, people hearing from you, you know, you're impacting and touching a lot of people while you're doing that. So you are a perpetual blessing for, you know, so many that need to hear it or need to get just something to encourage them. In the following chapters, 2 and 3, you talk about your mom. So you want to share with us her story and how long she had been connected to Emmanuel Church and what it was like growing up in that household.
Well, Ethel, she was a young unwed mother with me. She was 15 years old when I was born. My grandmother was a domestic worker in the rich white folks' home in Charleston. So she at least worked on a steady basis. My mom dropped out of high school after she had me and started to do the same kind of domestic work my grandmother was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was about a year or so old, she met my stepdad, Nathaniel Lance. And Nathaniel Lance was daddy to me. The only person I knew in my life, you know, as daddy. And so with that, it became five of us, me the oldest, and there were five children, and it always seemed like it wasn't enough. And we were on the east side of Charleston, because at that time, Charleston was full of black people. The city was black people. And, I mean, to me, I had a good childhood. You know, I didn't feel like we were dirt poor, and there were activities at the park in the neighborhood, the recreation center, and so there was always something to do. And, you know, school, I had all black teachers that loved you and pushed you. And, in 1968. 67, my mom's got a job with the city of Charleston working at the Gilliard Center. And, you know, when you get a job for the city, you got it going on. So our family kind of flourished, Dad. Daddy got a position at the docks as a longshoreman. And our family started to kind of move on up a little bit. And I was able to go to college on BEOG grants and everything they were giving out. And my sister Terry followed in my footsteps. And, but mom's was always a stickler about education. That was her thing. The only way you're going to make something of yourself is to get an education. But she did manage to finish high school. When I was in day high school, my mom was in the adult education class at the same high school and went back and got her high school diploma, and we ended up graduating the same year.
From high school and college?
From high school.
Okay.
Mama graduated from adult night school, and I graduated from high school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you and her had a, it sounded to me like the regular kind of mother-daughter relationship of back in the day
where, you know, mama would say, you do as I say and not as I do at all.
Exactly. Ooh, already. Already, you know. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mama, yeah, mama was a staunch person. She didn't play. She felt like when you did your job, mm-hmm. you did your best job. You won't ever leave anything messy mm-hmm. because that's what she did, basically. She kept things clean. She kept the Star's dressing room cleaned mm-hmm. at the place where she worked because all of the concerts mm-hmm. and ballets and everything was at this place.
Mm-hmm. Now, your mother sounds like quite a personality. Because I know that with my mom and grandma and aunts, who were domestic workers as well, they always had interesting stories of the people they encountered. And, mm-hmm. you know, did you have to serve at some of the things or be a part of some of the things? You know, when my mom and granny, they did parties, private parties for the bankers and the military officers, and we used to have to serve as kids. And you know, we had to carry the trays and empty the ashtrays. And
well, I would go to work with mama, especially if there was a show and she had to be there to clean up.
Uh-huh.
At night, she would take me with her, and I thought that was the best thing in the world. We were working our butts off.
I know, that's right.
And she would pay you a little something.
Yeah.
So for me, it was all good.
Yeah, those were certainly the days, because with my mom and them, you know, cooking and serving, we got to eat good that night.
Right? So, yeah.
Those were the days. I can tell you right now, if you have a family member that was a domestic worker from way back in somebody rich's house, ask them some stories. They'll tell you. And, you know, some folks might still be working in some rich folks' Nashville's houses.
Exactly.
Probably so.
But somebody got to clean up.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, we used to say, yes, I'll go. You know, because mm-hmm. we knew we were going to get some good food that night. You know, we're going to get some shrimp mm-hmm. and, you know, some different mm-hmm. things my mom and daddy couldn't afford. So,
right.
Yes, and we got to take home the leftovers and everything.
Right.
So those rich white people fed our family for a couple of days afterwards.
Yeah.
But the memories that you have of, you know, the times were hard. But mm-hmm. it's things like that, you know, keep you going. Now, in 1974, you say that your mom started going to Emmanuel AME Church. And
yeah.
Was all the family having to go too?
Yes. Okay, so I refer to it as when Mama got Jesus. When Mama got Jesus, her and my grand. Okay, so the Jackson, Susie Jackson, who was one of the members, and Tywanza Sanders, his family, their family knew my mom's and my dad's.
Mm-hmm.
And their daddy was a distant cousin of theirs. But anyway, Mama met this one of the sisters, and they invited her to come to Emmanuel.
Uh-huh.
And my mother went to Emmanuel, and then with my grandmother, they both joined the church. Mm-hmm. They did. And my grandmother died in 1976.
Mm.
So, but Mama, you know, she got onto the usher board real early
mm-hmm.
on in that church and served, and it wasn't until I think maybe, 2013
mm-hmm.
is when she started working for the church as a part-time custodian because mm-hmm. my sister Terry had died and my niece Najee lived with my mom's and she wanted to help Najee out, you mm-hmm. know, continue mm-hmm. to finish college.
Yeah,
so she took on that little extra job.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, when we come back, mm-hmm. Reverend Sharon, from the break, can you also in your Mama Gets Jesus chapter 3, you talk about your other two relatives that you lost during this, not just your mm-hmm. mother, but your cousins. And this
right.
this is heavy, y'all. This is a lot. I mean, for one person to go through, this is a lot. And can you also talk about the church, since you have been a part of it as well, and the church families that, you know, were kind of connected or knew your family well? Can you can you talk about that for us, please, when we come back?
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Today's book is For Such a Time as This, Hope and Forgiveness After the Charleston Massacre. If you have a question or comment, it's 615-329-8810. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
This weekend on Blues Time in the City, it's one of those crazy days, you know, February the 29th. And what do you do the weekend of February the 29th? You played the blues.
The way that I got around it, Rogene, was...
That's Willie Clayton, and back in the day, he didn't play when it came to his career. He's talking this weekend. Join me, Rogene Bailey, for Blues Time in the City this weekend right here. Catch Blues Time in the City Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on Jazzy 88.
Support for WFSK comes from the Frist Art Museum and Fisk University Galleries, presenting Terry Atkins, Our Sons and Daughters Ever on the Altar. The concurrent exhibitions are currently presented 45 years after Atkins' graduation from Fisk in sculpture, prints, installations, and video. The exhibition pays special attention to the influence that his time in Nashville had on the late internationally acclaimed artist. Terry Atkins, Our Sons and Daughters Ever on the Altar, on view now through May 31st at the Frist Art Museum and at the Fisk University Galleries now through September 12th. For complete details, visit fristartmuseum.org or fisk.edu/galleries. On July 27, 2012, WFSK was granted a license by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest as a public trustee until August 1, 2020. Our license will expire on August 1, 2020. We must file an application for license renewal with the FCC on April 1, 2020. When filed, a copy of this application will be available for public inspection at www.fcc.gov. It contains information concerning the station's performance over the last 8 years. Individuals who wish to advise the FCC of facts relating to our renewal application and to whether this station has operated in the public interest should file comments and petitions with the FCC by July 1st, 2020. Further information concerning the FCC's broadcast license renewal process is available at WFSK's office, Fisk University, 1017th Avenue North, Nashville, 37208, or may be obtained from the FCC, Washington, D.C., 20554, or www.fcc.gov.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville. Reverend Sharon Reicher is with us this morning from her home in Charleston, South Carolina. Among the many titles that she has had, former hospital chaplain and trauma specialist, she and an author, she is now a national advocate for gun law reform and spokesperson for Everytown Survivor Network and Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Her book, For Such a Time as This, Hope and Forgiveness After the Charleston Massacre, has really been one that many media outlets, national and international, have had her on to share the story of losing three family members. And before the break, Reverend, I wanted you to talk about the other two family members and the Emmanuel, Mother Emmanuel Church, and the relationships that you had with some of the people involved.
Okay, so in Emmanuel Church, there are lots of families, and then the family connections, and you call yourself cousins, and it might be, you know, your eighth cousin, but we still cousins, and that's the way we look at each other. Mm-hmm. From 10th grade, then everybody had to go to church with mama. Before that, you know, it was a free all. Now, I would go to church with my buddy across the street, her grandmother. I would go with them, and mama would prepare me to go with them, but she didn't go. But when she joined Emmanuel, mama got serious about church attendance. And as a young girl, all the people would sit in the back of the church, you know, as teenagers would do. And you just kind of, you know, when the family communion day, everybody went up, you know, the eighth cousin and everybody, because you're all a part of that family. And Cousin Susie sang in the choir. That was her thing. She had a beautiful voice, and she sang in the hymn choir and seemed like she was old all my life. But Cousin Susie, she was a very gentle woman, very gentle. You know, everybody just loved the church. They took their roles at the church very serious. Yeah. I mean, Emmanuel is one of the prominent churches, you know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. So there's a certain amount of decorum. You know, that church had the doctors and the lawyers and that type. You know what kind of church I'm talking about.
Amy, I know it all. I know it forward and backwards.
So that's the kind of church Emmanuel was. And there was that sense of community that you just became a part of, and everybody in that community wanted to see you do well.
Right. And the history, the history of the church too was well known.
Because I have the book in my hand. So in 1822, Denmark Vesey was one of the church founders, and you know he was accused of plotting a slave revolt. Mm-hmm. You know, so the birth of Emmanuel came out of the fact that even at that time as slaves, people wanted to be able to go to church and worship as they wanted to, as free people, you know.
So the shooter decided to really knock down blackness by the historic nature of he hated black folks so much, or had been brainwashed into hating people, that he picked that church out of all the churches, black churches in that city, because of its historic significance?
I believe so, because like I think I mentioned before, he said he wanted to start a race war. How much more can you annihilate a people, black people, is by getting rid of the church, symbolically? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly.
The symbol of what the church means to black people and the fact of that church says how much we want to be rid of you.
Right, right. Absolutely. And this struck a blow, you know, to me, to across the community of faith, coast to coast, behind what that young man did, and the symbolism. I think everybody pretty much got that, figured that he was trying to hurt one and all and mm-hmm. destroy us as a lynching mob would.
Right.
Since that time, and the trial, the funerals, the trial that you cover all this in the book, but since that time, you have been called to be an activist. And is this also ministry-based?
Yes, I call it my ministry of politics.
I like that. And how long have you been involved? And was it was that another stage of moving through the grief?
I think it was, because I became involved with the gun violence prevention movement really soon after mm-hmm. what happened in June. Lucy McBath, who is now Congresswoman mm-hmm. McBath mm-hmm. from the 6th District in Georgia, mm-hmm. her son was killed in 2012 mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in Jacksonville, Florida, the case about the loud music and right. the white man used the Stand Your Ground law right. to try to get out from under that. And well, anyway, Lucy reached out to me through a letter that went through the church. Mm. And the church sent me a packet of letters, and that particular one, like, my name was written on the side of it, yada, yada, this. I opened it. She gave me her number. I called her. And in September of that 2015, I told her I would work with them, and they called me and asked me, did I want to join a group of people on Capitol Hill mm-hmm. to talk about what had happened in Charleston. And that, really, I was still working at Parkland. Mm-hmm. And when they called me about this, I was like, well, they called you at the last minute. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I could get off work. And I told my boss about it. And she's like, well, Sharon, you just got back. And the Spirit of the Lord said, you know what? See if you coming in tomorrow. You tried to warn them. And I went to D.C. Hmm. And they helped me prepare a statement. And I stood up on the grounds on the lawn of Capitol Hill and poured my heart out and didn't know where that came from. But I knew it came from God. It was like that was the beginning. And at that time, I had a broken ankle. And I was on my scooter. But I was up there. I'm trying to tell you. The sneaky Jesus will get you.
Yes, he will. Yes, he will.
And that's how I started, and I hadn't stopped.
Amen. That's beautiful. Oh, and so knowing that's the case, and other situations have happened, Charlottesville or mm-hmm. the shootings at the temples. The Jewish temples.
Yeah, Tree of Life and yeah. Synagogue in yeah. Pittsburgh. Yeah. yeah.
And we had one here in Antioch, which wasn't defined as racially.
No, I know it, yeah. Davila Brooks. I'm a survivor person with her. Her son was killed in the Waffle House shooting.
Oh, wow.
Yes, okay. Out of Antioch, uh-huh. Texas.
Yes, ma'am.
Tennessee, her yeah. son was killed at that Waffle House.
Yes, ma'am.
And we have become good friends, and she's working in the activism also.
Wonderful.
So it's, yes, very much.
And knowing yeah. that's the case, our governor has proposed, and tell me if you think this is nuts, he has proposed that he'd like to have some legislation allowing most people in this state to carry a firearm in public without a background check or training. And he wants to have permitless carry take effect mm-hmm. in Tennessee, which will join 16 other states that have this same type of thing. And you, as anti-gun advocate, how you feel when you see 16 states? What are you on? What are the advocates saying about this?
We are trying to do everything we can.
Okay.
to flip people like him who believe that nonsense. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? You know, people don't realize that the open carry means that you can just carry your gun everywhere.
Yes.
You ain't got to get a background check. You can just be all willy-nilly gun out there. And that, you know, and this is what we are trying to do to get these laws craziness off the books and try to save lives as much as we can.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But see, we have these senators and people that are beholden to the NRA and the gun lobby, and it's all about money.
Yes.
So the more lax I make the laws, the more guns are going to be sold.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the more people are going to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
There is a connection to that, y'all. Believe it or not. The more guns there are, the more shootings there are. And I just think it's crazy. And when I did the story this morning, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around any and everybody having a gun. I mean, really?
I mean, okay, so I believe nobody's trying to take your gun. If you're going to be a responsible person and allow yourself to go through a background check,
truly,
to be trained into using your firearm, you know, having a gun means that you intend to kill.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, we all get in a situation, God, we pray it doesn't happen, and if you have to provide security for your family and all, fine.
Yeah.
But do it the right way. Do it the way of the law and not try to buck that.
Right.
Be responsible and accountable for having your gun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know that people are on a hair trigger anyway. If they can't even handle somebody cutting them off in traffic, you know.
Right.
I just can't even imagine if you cut them in the food line or something like that, or they don't get their hot chicken sandwich. You know, I can just about imagine how that story's going to play out.
And think about it. Young black men
are
killing each other at an alarming rate.
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
You know?
Yeah. And that's all we need.
It's crazy. It's a public health crisis that nobody seems to want to acknowledge.
And you know, I don't know, and I'm out of time, but are they not acknowledging it because they're so scared? They just want a gun, thinking is it a false sense of safety and security?
You know what? It's just kind of hard. But having a gun means power.
Yeah, it does.
And in America, power is everything.
Yeah.
And if you get your power from having a gun, then that's what you've been led to believe, that you need this gun to make you powerful.
Yeah, true. True that. Reverend Reicher, you have been a wonderful source of encouragement today, and I know that you've been on the road, been a road warrior, and we're gonna get off this conversation so you can chill out, because even warriors have to unplug. To get the copy of the book and to find out more about your ministry, where's the best place?
Okay. So my website is www.Sharon, Sharon, Reicher, Reicher, Speaks, speaks.com. Or you can look me up on Facebook. I'm on Twitter and Instagram.
You're everywhere.
But the book, you can get the book through Amazon, Books A Million, or you could go directly to the publisher, which is Chalice Press.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to definitely check on these organizations and try to follow up with them so we can get some balanced information on. And thank you so much for your work. And we're sorry, very sorry for your loss, and keep you in our prayers and thoughts always.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much.
You are certainly welcome. Yes. Be sure to check out the book, and that'd be a good book for the book clubs, you know, just so you, because it's true, it's a true story, and it's from her heart, and losing those relatives and that symbolism. of that historic AME church in Charleston, I am going to leave you today with this. Since her book title and story was taken, thoughts of it were taken from Esther 4:14, that's where I'm going to go with you. For if you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter, but you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this. You all have the very best of the best. And don't forget who loves you.
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.